Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Roundtable on this 13th of December. It is very nice to have you with us on this day. And welcome and good morning. Hopefully you have all had a good day, a good morning, and we welcome you to our program. Here's how you can be a part of it. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we are welcoming your letters, as we always do, panel at WAMC.org, and we'll get to those in due course. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get started on the news of the day. And we begin by welcoming Teresa Bourgeois to the program. She is our Wednesday regular and our dear friend, and we are thrilled that she is with us this morning. Good morning, first of all.
Good morning.
You brought in beautiful treats from the Schuyler Bakery in Watervliet, New York, one of my favorite places.
I love the Schuyler Bakery. I didn't realize it was a fave for you, too.
Shout out to Jay and to the whole group there, and good stuff.
Well, so let's just get one thing straight, because we don't want any payola here. You paid for these.
Oh, I paid full price, yeah. Yes. Okay. And I brought them in, sweet treats for Sweet Home Alabama.
Oh, that's a great.
There you go.
Sweets.
Great thought.
Sweets.
Well, we'll certainly be
talking
about.
Isn't Schuyler Bakery fantastic?
It is. It's a good old-fashioned bakery.
In Watervliet. Oh, birthday cakes. You want to get.
Alan.
Well, strawberry whipped cream birthday cake.
They've helped us out lovingly over around the fun drive. And But they come out and they literally have flour in their faces.
Yes.
It's great. It's just like, it looks like a Lucy skit. It's fantastic.
And just to be clear, Alan got a bran muffin. Don't, you know.
Which I am not going to eat.
Well, I'm going to have mine. I'm going to have my muffin. Yeah.
All right, I'll eat your bran muffin.
Joe Bonilla is with us. He is a communications consultant. We're thrilled always to have him, and we thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning. And I actually have never been to Schuyler Bakery. This is my first time even having anything from them.
You know, there's the two places you need to go in Watervliet, the Armory.
Absolutely.
And the Bakery.
Okay. Well, two for two,
Joe.
Ted's Fish.
And Ted's Fish, right. All right.
Just not in the same day.
Well, I don't know.
You could.
Jen, make a day of it. Jen Smith is the Berkshire. She'll tell you all the great places to go there as well. She was on a wonderful vacation last week.
I
had a lovely time.
A little New England trip from Portland, Maine, up to almost Canada in Vermont.
Ooh.
Newport, Vermont.
Portland's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really fun.
Good
it
for you. Well, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. It's good to. I was that baker a few hours ago this morning. I work part time at a bakery.
Really?
In the Berkshires. So.
What's the name of that bakery?
It's Tunnel City Coffee House, and they have a scratch bakery there. So it's a coffee roastery and a bakery. And so I made muffins too this morning, but I had to bring them in.
Yeah.
I will do that.
That's very cool.
Well,
we welcome you. Thank you very much for being with us. Alan
Chartak
is here. Good to have you here, sir. Thank you. And you have a bran muffin waiting for you.
I ain't about that bran muffin. I am in catastrophic shape right now. Catastrophic.
Oh, my God.
He's not going to eat a bran. He wants one of the honey dip donuts. Heck with the bran muffin.
I want them all, but I don't have them. That's what this is. This lifetime is all about. The concept of self-denial.
No self-control, just self-denial.
Clearly, that is what this lifetime is.
Yes,
about.
Yes.
So we made that clear. Well, hey.
What happened last night,
Joe? I'm not too proud. I am a happy boy this morning. I was quite upset by the state of things and maybe, I don't know, if it was possible to say this. I don't even see this as a political thing, quite frankly. I just couldn't believe that we would, where there was that much smoke regarding a candidate and abuse to children, that he could be elected to the United States Senate.
By one percentage.
And the people of the state of Alabama proved that decency will win out in the end. And I think they got a darn good guy in the process. But so it was a nail biter. I watched that thing from 6:30 last night till probably 1:30 this morning.
Really?
And I just couldn't. It was an up and down race, unbelievable. Doug Jones defeating Roy Moore. And obviously, we'll talk about all of this morning. Trimming the GOP majority in the Senate down to one. Mr. Jones and the Democrats won in this Republican state, and then you have Roy Moore, who had a scandal-plagued campaign, was MIA for the last several days of the campaign, not even appearing.
I have a theory on that. Check in with me.
I will. And then last night coming out, I believe Mr. Jones made his statement around 10:30, and somewhere around 11:40, Roy Moore came out and said that he wasn't going to concede and that there was still a possibility of a mandatory recount. And then go talk to the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State said, yeah, there's no way that he can make up that deficit. So it will be interesting to see what happens in the hours and days to come. But that is the basics of it. 49.9% for Doug Jones. The president tweeted out last night that it was the write-ins had a big impact, and he's right on that. And so we look at this race and say, well, what does it mean? What can we read into it? And that's what we'll discuss this morning. Alan, your takeaways.
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, look at what had to happen in order to get this win. You had to have the senior senator from the state saying no, and a beloved figure. You had to have another Republican senior senator showing that he was sending a copy of his check to Doug Jones.
Right. Jeff Flake.
Jeff Flake, of course. Yes. And then you had this strange, as you say, disappearance of the candidate. And I have a theory on this, and here's the theory, that we heard from the president of the United States, who basically told his staff, I'm going to do this, even though Ivanka and others are telling him not to do it. But he, in his bravado, in his egotism, this is my theory now, he tells the candidate, Moore, who every time he opens his mouth gets into trouble, you disappear and I'll handle the whole thing and I'll get you over the line. So now Trump has lost two times. He's lost in the primary because he had Moore's opponent. And number two, he has now lost in this election. So my sense of it is that this is a big loss for the president. And the exit polls, which are so telling, is in Republican red state. What was that? Republican red state.
Jen just had an idea.
Alabama, they are split down the middle. He's only got a 50% of the electorate approval.
Yeah,
48% less than half the people.
So you're right. So this portends what we see coming, you know, the next time out. And can I just please eat a little, you know, whatever, and crow and say, you know, I called it wrong. But I called it wrong for a reason, as I announced on the show.
You did say that yesterday.
I said he was going to lose, that Moore was going to win, so I could put the double whammy hex on him. And I got a letter here from the rector of the Emanuel Church in Bel Air, Maryland, who says, Happy Hanukkah. I love it. Props to the great Alan Shartok. See this? For predicting the victory of Judge Moore in Alabama, your hex was perfectly delivered and obviously effective. Next summer, I will send you a list of candidates in my neck of the woods. I would like you to predict will win to a similar effect, I hope. Now, is that good or what?
That was
then there was another one. Then there was another one says,
where's that person from, the first one?
Maryland.
That's fantastic. Yeah, shout out
father.
To him.
Go to the app.
Okay. And so and another one from Robert, who says, hello, panel. After weeks of predicting Roy Moore's election victory, we can now say political guru and talking head Alan Shartok was wrong. Alabama stepped up and showed that basic human decency trump political values. Alan should have more faith in humanity. And then he has the last line. He says, and I, who also thought Moore was a shoo-in, should also have more faith in humanity. Nice.
All right, we'll balance.
Well, and I have to say, you know, we were talking about this yesterday and kind of thinking of who was going to Alan put us all on the spot to say, you know, who was going to win last night. I think JP and I were the only two that said that Doug Jones could win. And I think a lot of it just had to do with the fact that you hoped that, not that you, we certainly have been smacked around enough in the head to realize that decency doesn't have to win all the time, but you hope that maybe you get a lesson here somewhere along the,
and now, Teresa,
the line.
Teresa's been saying all along
that this was possible. So I will give Teresa credit too, because you said it prior to the allegations that mm-hmm. Democrats, this was a seat that the Democrats should really pour some money, which they did. They poured a ton of money into, and that it was in play.
Yeah, I really believed it was in play, and thank you for it was before that, because a couple things. One is that Doug Jones used to work for Howell Heflin, a former senator, Democratic senator from Alabama, who is beloved.
And we all remember him from the Watergate hearings.
And, right. And so there was that connection with somebody who is beloved. But also, if you look at the key industries in Alabama, Bombardier is one of the biggest employers. That's a Canadian industry. The Hyundai, the third largest employer there is a Mexican company, a parts supplier. I mean, they people vote their conscience and they vote their pocketbook. And so I think that there were key pocketbook issues that people were concerned about. And if you look where the votes came from, that proved it. But the other key thing that happened last night, In the 2016 election, the did not vote party prevailed. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, the vote party prevailed. People voted, and particularly African Americans in very high numbers. And when people vote, it makes a difference.
That was terrific. That turnout was terrific.
I don't know if I have this term, or this, not term, but this number correct, but I believe I do. I have it on my screen.
30%.
I just have to find it. But it was 63%, and it may have even been 66, but I think it was 63%. Of married women with children,
right,
voted for Doug Jones.
Right.
Wow.
And many, if not most of them, Republicans.
And the anticipated turnout was about 18%, and the actual turnout was 40,
right,
over 40%.
Yep.
People voted, and decency prevailed. I mean, that's what you have to believe in, the fundamental decency of Americans.
Now, decency prevailed. But not by much. Jen, you were going to say?
Well, it was interesting. Yesterday, I spent my afternoon sort of talking to folks from the Berkshires who were taking part in text banks, virtual phone banks, calling, reaching out to Alabama voters, and, you know, just hearing why they were interested in mobilizing this race. And a lot of it had to do with the effect on mobilizing voter turnout, making sure that there was an incidence of suppression fraud, that they weren't getting misinformation about where polling stations were, that they could get rides. So there are people arranging that from here in the Berkshires, thanks to modern technology. The other interesting person I talked to was a woman who formerly lived in your neck of the woods, Allen, in Monterey, a little bit further south.
Over to the hills.
Yeah. Yes. And but
this
she,
is Monterey, Massachusetts, yeah, not California.
And, but she was a Mobile born, and she said she was one of the skeptical folks when, you know, Doug Jones first announced his candidacy, and she was just like, ah, nah. And same thing with her friends. And, you know, she went to college in Alabama. But then things started to change. And what I was really talking about, too, was the grassroots movement that pushed the support for him, that energized the people of Alabama around
people.
The issues. Right. Exactly. When I asked her what was driving the change, what she thought was driving the change, she said, you know, initially I wasn't sure, but she's like, I think it's the younger people. But also she's like, there were noticeable changes when you went to church there, that people were preaching things like decency and unity, and people started changing their ideas. And you have to look at the, you know, ground level circumstances of what is happening in Alabama right now, in terms of poverty and trouble with healthcare. You've got the United Nations there doing their investigations this week into the state of things. And, you know, Alabama ranks the lowest and among the lowest in terms of the quality of education system, the quality of access to public services. And people want change, and the historic vote there, the historic representation there, folks in recent history haven't seen change in the last 25 years. And I think that helped restore faith, and the fact that Doug Jones was out versus, you know, Roy Moore kind of being not in front of the people and not, again, mobilizing people, being that voice and getting them to the polls.
I mean, you look at this as being the real perfect storm for Democrats, you know, looking into 2018, but also the perfect campaign in terms of the roadmap that Doug Jones actually laid out. He told national Democrats, don't come to Alabama. Let me take care of this. You had a fantastic campaign consultant in that of Joe Trippi, who had advised Howard Dean about 12 years ago, 13 years ago. So you look at all of this. But at the same time, despite all the accusations against Roy Moore, Doug Jones was only able to get 49.9%. So you still look at this as, yes, exactly, this was a referendum on civility in our politics, but Democrats still need to figure a stronger message if they're going to look to be successful in 2018 for the midterms.
And he's not going to be there for that much longer.
It's 2020.
I mean, obviously, that perfect storm was a perfect storm once.
Right.
And he's going to have to run again, and, you know, and it's still the reddest of red states.
Right.
And I think, go ahead, Teresa. Oh, I think, you know, I think that's Doug Jones' challenge, right, is to be held accountable to, if you look at his priorities, and one of the first things he said after being elected, I know, Teresa, this has been one of your banner arguments, too, is to, you know, get CHIP passed in Congress. You know, that's taking care of families. And I think it's the families of Alabama that, you know, came out to support him and that want to see change. And so I think there's a really big test ahead to see not only if he can be held accountable, and it seems so far transparent enough that he will, but that he can be a change maker.
Oh, I mean, he's definitely an endangered species, a red state Democrat in the Senate. So in terms of what he has already pledged, he already pledged to work with Richard Shelby, the senior senator from Alabama, but more or less looking at these red meat issues about health care and the economy in Alabama, not so much a social issue, even though he said he will still advocate for traditional Democratic values. But he also knows the reality of basically looking at 2020, when we do have the presidential election coming up, and you'll have the top of the ticket, which will be at that point maybe still Trump. But that's the challenge that Doug Jones faces.
And you know what's amazing? What's amazing?
Will you tell me what's amazing in 2 seconds?
Pro-choice.
Actually, when we come back.
He
we'll
was
be right back. Welcome back. As we come back from the break, or as we call it, donut time, we welcome you to write during that time, and it's panel at WAMC.org. Many of you took us up on that offer, and here are a few of the letters that we received.
Okay. Thank you, Alan, for putting the hex on Roy Moore. I only wish it had worked on Trump last November with an unsmiley face next to it, downward smile. You're right. You're absolutely right. I just couldn't bring myself to predict. Well, I did, actually. I did predict it, that Trump was going to win, and he won, and didn't work. Dearest panel, I thought that Roy Moore would win. Thankfully, I was wrong. That being said, please note it was something less than 20,000 votes. Still quite alarming, yes. And I was thinking about the demographics from the exit polls. Mm-hmm. And one of the demographics that showed that people who were not college educated, to go to your point, were massively in favor of Moore. You know, so that the lower—
Republicans, not college.
Yes.
Right. Not Democrats.
You know, but lower middle class.
The other thing, too, though, if and I'm at the end of the semester, so I'm thinking about grading on curves. But when you look at 2 points, OK, that's a close race, no matter how you look at it. But if you look at 2 points in Alabama,
right,
that seems like that's a pretty good a pretty good
was
thumping.
It, really two, right. It was really more like 1 point.
It's, well, it's 1 point. I don't know.
It's going to come up to about two.
Yeah.
When it washes out.
I think it's 1.8 as of right now. But right. Yes, go
in
ahead.
In terms then. Of statistics and demographics, too, I think there is still a lot to be discussed. Again, as we were talking before, this is only 40% of the, you know, eligible state voting population. Right. So what's on the minds? Why didn't some people go to the polls? You know, was it just that they were so undecided that they just didn't sure. like either candidate that much? You know, I think these are all things to be explored.
But it was still, Jen, still a massive turnout compared to what
oh,
they
absolutely. Expected.
Right. A massive
Remember
turnout.
That in a
For a special election, especially.
Well, yeah, presidential campaign, which is our number one campaign, it's usually a little less than 50%.
Right.
So you know, that's a pretty good turnout down there.
And also go ahead.
This data point that 48% of the people support Donald Trump is stunning.
Yeah.
It's stunning. And what does that mean for the tax bill? I mean, I think that both for health care and for the tax bill, this sends a really strong signal.
Two statements. One having to do with what you just said about the unfavorable ratings. There were people in Alabama in certain districts during the 2016 presidential election said that they had a 60% unfavorable rating of Donald Trump, and they still voted for him. So the fact that he has a 48% and even but those people came out and voted for Doug Jones in this case. So that's interesting. The other thing is, and I realize the politics of it and the walking on eggshells of what is Alabama and not bringing in too many voices from the liberal north to talk, to bring in the race. And you're going to talk more about pocketbook issues as far as social issues. I have all of that. I just thought that in the end, Doug Jones was a very, very impressive candidate. He seemed to handle himself very well. He didn't go in the gutter. Pardon this term, but prey on these allegations. He made his case. He certainly showed the contrast. He certainly used the voices of others. But I thought in the end, I mean, that was about as clean a campaign as somebody could run, given the circumstances of how ugly it was.
But I also think that Barack Obama should not be forgotten about in all of this. Remember, this is a guy who has pretty well stayed out of it, out of presidential politics up until now. We know what he thinks, but he really did put himself out there to make this happen.
Yeah, so I'm sure with Trump, you know, to be defeated by in this race, but particularly, you know, the robocalls.
Having the competing robocalls.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I also thought it was interesting when you listen to the closing rally, Moore's closing rally with Steve Bannon there. Mm. And there was Steve Bannon, to your point, Joe, about people coming from the outside saying, you know, we're not going to let these Democrats come in and tell us how to vote. But if you looked at the rundown of speakers at the rally, most of them, four more, were not from Alabama.
Right.
So at the same time, they're denigrating Jones for bringing people from the outside. And
that kind of thing has never mattered to them before, mm-hmm. Teresa. Right. Why would you think they would start now
the
being
truth
consistent?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
This is a big repudiation of Steve Bannon, too. And I'm sure that.
It's not forgotten.
But the other thing we have to remember is you've got to believe that there are a lot of Senate Republicans and other Republicans in Washington who are really happy about this.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think if it weren't for them. I mean, it was all part of the perfect storm. If it weren't for the establishment Republicans, you know, there's no way this would have happened.
Right.
But to Joe's point, though, Doug Jones is a really solid candidate. And, you know, he was
top-notch anywhere else in the country. I mean, but it was so particularly important that we had a top-notch candidate in Alabama that could compete against someone like Roy Moore.
But let's remember that this is as deep south as you get, right? Let's remember that, you know, how did Jones make his reputation? You know, he prosecuted the KKK and put them in jail. That's got to be somewhat risky when you're a senatorial candidate, and yet there was a sort of grudging. Okay, this is a good guy.
Right.
And it was interesting. Condoleezza Rice, who's from Birmingham. And, you know, she came in at the last minute against Roy Moore, which I thought
Charles
was
Barkley
Charles
too.
Barkley.
I mean, JP brought this up yesterday on the program. I think that had a huge impact, and he is a guy who certainly has conservative views, and I thought his statement last night about this is it's time of taking advantage the time of taking advantage against minorities and children is.
Done.
And I think that had an impact.
But you look at the backlash that Steve Bannon is having across the country now. You had
we enjoy that? Just
oh, absolutely.
Moment? Okay, good.
Absolutely.
Right.
But you look at the PAC that's closely aligned with Mitch McConnell, and the president of the PAC said, you know, not only did Steve Bannon cost us a critical Senate seat in one of the most Republican states in the country, but he also dragged the president into this whole fiasco.
You're right.
Right.
You're absolutely
and
right
And then
about
follow that.
That
up was, this is also a brutal reminder that candidate quality matters regardless of where you are running. Mm-hmm. So you have him saying that. You also have Representative Pete King also blasting Bannon. So this is truly, you know, might be that. That moment where, you know, the Republican Party truly repudiates the tactics of Steve Bannon. Maybe.
Go ahead. There's further division created,
so nice
in the Republican Party, too, because not only did you have, people criticizing Bannon, but also you had people on the Bannon team criticizing the McConnell team. So
absolutely.
It was very fascinating to kind of watch this kind of implode in the midst of things like the tax overhaul.
And that civil project. War between Bannon and McConnell factions
right.
is not over. But I would argue that Bannon did not drag the president into this, but the president did drag the RNC and
right.
Rona Romney.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, I think there's going to be reverberations.
I disagree with you.
Dragging
no, I
the
think
RNC
Bannon, I think Bannon... Theresa, I think Bannon pulled the president into this.
I mean, I think he influenced
it. And was the voice
it,
that got him to do this.
Yeah.
And the president, for his own part, accepted the wisdom of Bannon that he personally could make it all happen and that he would bring him home to victory.
Well, I think he was closer to Roy Moore than he was to Luther Strange. I mean, you mm-hmm. remember when Trump went down and talked about Luther Strange. It was just painful to watch, and he half endorsed Moore in the same event. And when he was at the rally in Pensacola the other night for Roy Moore, he was really behind him.
Because that was his base.
That's
mm-hmm.
his guy.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I think he was more attuned with Roy Moore than he was with Luther Strange.
You know, I agree with that. I agree with that. He let the other guys pull him into this. Because they thought they could win with one and not with the other. And by the way, they probably could have.
And he lost twice.
Yeah,
right.
They probably could have. If Moore had lost in that primary, I think they would have won the election.
Yeah, Strange would have won the
absolutely.
Election.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay. Good morning, panel. Thank you, Jeff Sessions. Because of Jeff Sessions, we now have a special counsel, Bob Mueller, and Doug Jones in the Senate. And that's from Keith. Maybe.
Well, I'm seeing a lot of analysis basically that, you know, Jeff Sessions being named Attorney General is the most consequential decision of the Trump presidency because of those two exact points. And so, yeah, I tend to agree with that.
Yeah, so one of the pundits was saying last night, another reason why Trump is going to hate Sessions even more. But
Regular correspondent Julius writes us this morning.
Hello, Julius.
Good
Hello.
Morning. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
This is also a wake-up call to Republicans. To double down on their voter disenfranchisement efforts before 2018 and 2020, we also have to carefully watch the gerrymandering case before SCOTUS. With all due deference to you, Julius, and you're a very bright guy, the idea is that they're going to have to reconsider whether they stop black people from voting. Nonsense. They're going to double down on making sure that they close the doors even more.
Right. Yeah, you've got, at least 20 states now enrolled in automatic voter registration. And I think, again, that grassroots push is going to continue to happen. There's a lot of folks in many other states watchdogging this particular election to make sure, again, that this didn't happen. And I think, it was a key issue that brought the vote to where it arrived. And among that, I don't think, I think this nation really needs to pay attention to not only the Black voice, but other minority groups. And in his remarks, Doug Jones also acknowledged the Latino community. Rarely, and I'm a part of this community, but rarely do you hear the Asian community acknowledged. But these are all these demographics that people haven't noticed. And even I also fall into another demographic subset that's historically less enrolled in voting, which is young women ages 18 to 35 that are not engaged. So I think there's going to be even more efforts because I think it showed that every vote really truly counted in this race.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter because we don't do this. We don't say people have to be Black to be on the panel or white to be on the panel or the rest of this thing. But we did get one letter from somebody who thought that we should have somebody of color on the panel this morning, and we have two people of color, and we never announced that. We'd say, well, we could be self-serving. We say, well, you as a Black person, what do you think, Jen? Or it just has gotten to be, you know, sort of ugly that people will make their assumptions without checking the facts. I'm sure of that. Joe, are you giving me a look?
Letters.
Okay. George says, lest you gloat too much, remember that half of Alabama's voters chose a pedophile over a Democrat.
Yep.
And that the Republican Party's worship of power knows no moral bounds. And that's from George in Sandersfield. I think he's right.
Well, Well, decency prevailed.
Well, but is this situational ethics? When you're going to take away 26 million people, I'm sorry, but 26 million people off the healthcare rolls, how can you possibly disagree with the idea the Republicans worships a power party and knows no moral bounds? Take 26 million people's healthcare away from them. That's an ignoring moral bounds, isn't it?
Well, I'm interested to see, as I've said, what impact this has on the tax bill. Now, clearly, I think that the Republicans have been rushing this tax bill anyway, but it seemed in the last 48 hours they were rushing it more. And my sense is that they had some polling that showed that this is going sour for them.
Because, who are the senators who are going to give them a hard time? Susan Collins,
well,
you got
now,
another
the
one?
Question now is, what does Flake do? What does McCain do? What does Susan Collins do? Because certainly Susan Collins, her vote came with the agreement on passing health care legislation that's not going to happen, on meeting some financial targets that's not going to happen. All the things she was promised, she's not going to get. So let's see if that her vote holds. And then Flake.
I'm sorry, Teresa, could you go over that again? Susan Collins objected to the health care bill and was one of the votes that killed it.
She had a couple of different a couple of different promises.
Right. Go ahead.
That she was given assurance by McConnell that there would be changes in the bill. That a separate compromise health care bill would pass separately. That's remember there was a compromise bill that came out of the Senate committee, and she was assured that that would go for a vote. No one believes that that's going to come up for a vote. She was assured that some of the targets, the deficit targets, would be met, and that some of the deductions would be put back. None of the core things that she was promised are going to be in the final bill. So what's she going to do? What's her vote going to be? What's John McCain going to do? What are some of the people now up for election? Some of the Republicans up for election? Are they going to rethink this? Because as Jen was talking about earlier, just the demographics in Alabama, this tax bill is going to come with deep, deep cuts. It's going to get the numbers to work, it's going to come with deep, deep budget cuts in health care, in education, in infrastructure, in investments in research and other things. Are they really, some of these folks up for election, really going to be so willing to do that now, given the signals that this vote sent?
Interesting. You know, McCain came out very early for this tax bill.
Right.
And said he would do it. And when it looked, I don't think it looked a lot better than it looks now. In fact, I think it looked worse.
It's now more skewed to the wealthy. The changes they made last night.
Oh, I see what you mean.
They made changes last night to make the numbers work. that more skew it to the wealthy because they've they've lowered the top tax bracket.
And I think we're neglecting, too, that Trump just signed in legislation for a massive defense funding bill. And I don't know how this country is going to pay it. But, right. You know, when you look at this budget chess game, as it's called, of balancing the books and the budget, it's becoming extremely problematic, and it's not accounting for some of these other bills that are passing in you know, either by the president or in Congress that, you know, are going to throw off kilter some of that 2.9% balance goal that they have.
And we have been talking all along about, I mean, these politicians certainly can read the polls, and the polls, people saying they hate this bill. They don't like the bill. On the other hand, it's the polls of what the people want versus what the donors want. We've been saying this one each time.
The two are not congruent.
Well, right. So
can I? We have to pause for a break.
We pause.
Otherwise, we have two breaks right back to back. So let me take a break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll talk for a little bit, and then we'll take another break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. Teresa Bourgeois, Joe Bonilla, Jen Smith, and Alan Chartok. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll finish up with some letters and then we'll move on.
Very quickly. Okay. Let's see. Matt writes, please mention that white voters voted more by over 70%. They preferred a homophobic child predator who doesn't believe Muslim people should serve in Congress over a Democrat. Democrats still have a lot of work to do, and that's Matt in Clifton Park. Panel, oh joy, there is an important message for so many people. Your vote counts.
Exactly.
If you are a minority or someone who is poor, your vote counts. Please register and vote.
Yay. Absolutely. For whoever wrote that letter. That's exactly.
And whoever wrote that letter was Catherine.
Catherine.
Thanks, Catherine.
That is the lesson from yesterday's election. Thank
and remember
you.
The vote every year. There's local yes. elections, there's state elections, federal elections.
Jason says, Alabama. Hooray! That's what it says. Okay. And then.
That says it. No, that's okay.
And yeah. Then, I felt that way.
Extra exclamation points, too.
And then Victoria, Vicky says, let's hope that in 2018, it will not always take a candidate who are monsters like Roy Moore to get out the vote. And that's from Vicky in Nova Scotia, Canada.
Wow. Quite a regional amount of letters.
Baltimore, yeah. Nova Scotia.
All good stuff. All right, so let us move on and talk about other things unless, of course, anybody has more to say about this particular subject. Hearing no one, we'll move on. there was, of course, the other issue that was really dogging the president yesterday was the fight that he got into with Kirsten Gillibrand. And the tweet that we talked about yesterday morning, and then the very strange reaction,
yeah.
Not completely unexpected, but the very strange reaction from Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the press briefing yesterday. This all comes as the president trumps out at Kirsten Gillibrand after she urged him to resign and denying again the accusations against him and deriding Kirsten Gillibrand. The president ensured that the issue would gain added energy and prominence, and it has certainly done that. Widely criticized by both Republicans and Democrats that the tweet that he sent yesterday, in which he called her a lightweight and said she would do anything for campaign contributions, was
a sexual innuendo, you think, when she didn't
yes.
do
well,
anything?
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the word is used and would do anything for. And so anyway, this came after the women came forward on Monday to renew their charges from last year. Gillibrand called on him to resign on Monday. And so you have the president who seemed to have weathered those accusations, and now is just putting his foot right into it once again. And those allegations have come back. I read this morning there is another woman who's come forward. So it's interesting to see what is to be made of this, and how you think of this as a, especially, and I guess the timing of it, of course, and the day that Roy Moore loses, of how this hurts the president. Or does it have no effect at all?
Well, this is a very complicated one, I'll tell you right now. There's a general rule in politics. Ready? And Teresa, I'm sure, will back me up. First, you have to win a primary. In other words, you're running for president, and I think it's fairly well established that Gillibrand's people have been thinking about her running for president. First, you have to win a primary. Well, she was polling about 1% when they were putting Democrats, potential Democrats up. I think this helps her a great deal. I don't know whether political motivation discounts somebody from being a candidate. JFK did it. You know, everybody else did it. These are politicians. These are people who know what they're doing. You don't have to have pure as the driven snow altruism in order to do it. But I think it's a smart political move. I don't think it was a smart political move for her to go after Bill Clinton, because the Clintons have done a great deal for Kirsten Gillibrand. You know, that you bite the hand that feeds you, people don't like it. And there are a lot of people who like the Clintons. They really like them. You lose a certain number of people who won't forget that.
How, though, and just for the reality check in my brain, how does Sarah Huckabee Sanders stand up there and say that we are the ones who are in the gutter because we saw that tweet as sexist?
Well,
tell me how that makes sense.
Could I go? Could I answer? And I know I've spoken too much.
No, never.
Good grief, Joe. I mean, you know, these people say anything they want to say at any given moment. There's a hotline.
This is sexist at all. This is simply talking about a rigged system that we have that is broken,
right,
in which special interests control our government.
I hope she takes stenography when the president is on the other end of the phone yelling at her about what she has to say next.
There's spin doctors, but there's also people who just go on the merry-go-round, and that's what the press secretary is doing. She's trying to figure whatever way to deflect from it. But, you know, in my daytime job, I mean, we have to deal with this issue all the time, but there's a point where civility matters and the truth matters, and that's what you have to look at.
Yeah, I found that press conference yesterday to be one of the most stunning, and that's a high bar. But let's just say she's right. I don't agree with her, but let's just say she's right, that this was really him, Trump, you know, talking about the draining the swamp, and that, you know, people, you can't buy people's votes, that all that whole process is wrong. Okay. So then where is the reporter asking about the Mercers and what they got paid off in this tax bill? Where is the reporter, I hope, who's going to say Donald Trump just set the Middle East on fire to pay off Sheldon Adelson? Everyone believes that this issue about moving the capital to Jerusalem was a payoff for the $25 million that Sheldon Adelson donated to his campaign. In the holiest time of the year, he sets that region on fire. And by all accounts, it was for a political campaign payoff. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think she's telling the truth, but say she was, follow her logic. And it leads right to troublesome behavior by Donald Trump paying off his campaign contributors. What is this tax bill? Tax bill is a payoff to the campaign contributors.
Jen, jump in and then we'll take a break.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to go back to your point of the rhetoric and how did she say that? I was just looking at the CNN analysis and I think this line kind of says it all. It says, lightweight, quote-unquote lightweight Gillibrand joins low-energy Jeb Bush, little Marco Rubio, crooked Hillary Clinton, and rocketman Kim Jong-un. So that rhetoric is pretty consistent in terms of its demeaning. It's, you know, we all know what kind of little meant when he was making that statement. And that's just, again, an example of sort of the lowbrow terminology and
but it's worked for him so far. Will it keep working for
but
him?
But it seems to be especially boorish against women. He seems to be even take the bar lower.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think it definitely, well, and again, you know, these were words used by Sarah Huckabee Sanders too, and saying that, you know, it was our minds in the gutter, and then he used the actual phrasing. But I think we as the public have a decision to make of, you know, are we going to give in to this current distraction? Or are we just going to, you know, put that in the another tally and you know, say like this is just another example of what this administration is doing, and then, you know, move on towards the bigger issues.
Let us take a break before Ray's head explodes. We'll be back right after this.
Oh, brother.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Let me reintroduce the panel to you just so you know who they are. We have Dr. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Joe Bonilla, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters at panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Let us for a moment go to some other stories. Were we done? Did anybody else want to say anything on the Kirsten Gillibrand? I know we went right up to the break. Did anybody else have anything to say about that?
I said what I have to say.
Well, just positioned her for 2020, and so. But you also look at the other senators that joined along her call for the president to resign. You look at the two senators from Oregon, and so I mean, we'll see how this plays out, and also Cory Booker as well.
100 lawmakers on that list now on the letter to calling for him for his resignation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The most important thing now is budget, taxes, and health care.
Sign
in the next 2 weeks.
Okay, so why don't we talk about those things and talk about the tax bill? What we're hearing is congressional Republicans are in advanced talks to reduce the tax rate for top earners to 37% as part of the final tax bill. And senior Republican negotiators were close to reaching a deal Tuesday to reduce the tax rate for high-income households from 39.6% to 37%, blowing past political concerns about aiding the rich in order to ease passage of a $1.5 trillion tax package. Teresa.
There was an interesting press conference with the Democrats yesterday about how this tax scheme, tax package, will affect veterans and people in the military. And they had a number of people who are now members of Congress who had been in the military before. And it will be devastating to them, as it will. And, you know, we've talked about this is really an attack on education. There are tax benefits for small businesses to hire veterans, particularly disabled veterans, that go away with this tax package. A shockingly high percentage of veterans are on food stamps, the SNAP program, and this will end up with cuts in that. Some of them rely on Medicaid. They were talking about how advances that have been made in veterans' health will probably be turned back. So I think the key with this tax package is that it's really not good for most average working Americans. And the question is, will the Freedom Caucus, who claims to be concerned about deficits, will they go for this? Will the California Republicans, who are going to need the funding to rebuild after these fires, are they going to go for this? And what about the key House Republicans from New York State, given the SALT provisions that are in this? Are they going to go for this?
All right, let's go to a couple letters, then we will move on.
I just am sitting here pondering what Teresa just said, because I always try to get inside their heads. I want to get inside John Faso's head, you know. You remember Trudeau did a thing with Reagan where he had an instrument that would go into Reagan's head to examine his brain. I like to get into their heads to say, What would I be thinking if I were John Faso or Lee Stefanik this morning and saw those results and saw that, you know, is it still, if I cross this guy, I will become an enemy. And I don't need that. I need to do, you know, what I'm told. They'll protect me if they can. They protected John Faso on at least the, you know, the health care bill and others. So,
but now what happens if those Republicans, the House Republicans in California, need to vote no on this tax bill because of the fires and the funding they're going to need for the fires?
Yeah.
Then what happens if to Elise Stefanik and John Faso, if their vote is needed? Are they going to turn against their constituents and stand with Ryan, or are they going to stick
my
with
bet
their constituents?
Is not. My bet is they will not.
They stay with their constituents?
They'll stay with the president. You know, they'll take, the party will take care of them as much as they can. But when they be, as they did before, they had the votes they needed. They let them go. They say, okay, you're not in the tank. You're off the hook. But at the point at which they really need them, they're going to get them.
There's going to be a real rush to jam this through even faster.
Absolutely.
Because they need to pass this before before Doug Jones gets seated.
Right.
But
yeah, it's true. Okay, so
get
here we go.
Practice.
Panel is right, says Howard. Democrats yet need to prove that they can win with positive message. Alan offering that Trump backed the wrong candidate. Why would Alan ever think that a Republican president would back a Democratic candidate? The only candidate that Trump endorsed was Luther Strange. No, Howard. He endorsed, and big time, he endorsed Mr. Moore. And he of course, did endorse him. So who ever thought that he would back a Democratic candidate? I never said that.
Well, a lot of Republicans said that they were going to stay out of the race.
Sure.
Remember, the national RNC stepped out of the race.
Yeah.
They pulled their money back. They said a lot of other Republicans said that we're not going to cross this line. We're not going to cross a line that says we'll support a candidate who allegedly molested a 14-year-old girl.
To quote the late Mrs. Zwick, my math teacher back in junior high school, "Shut talk keeps shut." All he had to do was keep shut. But no, he thought he could. His ego and his narcissism said, "You go out of state. I'll take care of the whole thing. That's the deal. You go out of state. Stay away. I'll take care of the whole thing." And he didn't. Right? Okay. I have to assume that's it. Good morning, panel. I ask you, please, please, please note that it was a black female vote that overwhelmingly, in capital letters, elected Jones. The black female, in capital letters, vote is critical to this country healing. Thank you. And that's from Otha.
That's absolutely true.
Absolutely right.
Absolutely.
And if we didn't say that loud enough,
right.
I thought we were saying it, but yeah.
Say it a little bit louder.
We'll say it louder. She's absolutely
and here's
right.
And hoping that others across the country are listening, that you can't ignore this group of voters. You can't ignore a lot of group of voters. You have to listen more than you talk.
You're so right, Jen. But what I'm thinking here is, I always say thinking when I want to be progressive. You know, liberals drop their G's, as you probably say. We're thinking about, you didn't, Teresa, give me a look here.
All I care about is that people understand the power they have when they vote.
Well, right. That's right. And now the question, and thank you for getting me back on track here, because then the question is, so many times when groups of voters should have voted in their own interest and they have not, what is it that we can take away from this particular victory where people turned out? Was it Barack Obama, Deval Patrick? Was it a basketball player, Mr. Barkley, who I learned yesterday was a basketball player?
And you retained it. That's good. You retained it.
Yeah. Was it all of it? Was it all of that? Well,
right.
It's not on Gunsmoke, and it wasn't in the Weavers. So
it's not on Gunsmoke.
So therefore, what is it that we can learn from this particular instance, where in general elections, all too often, it's been abysmal?
I think, again, you can't, especially after the conversations that I had yesterday, you can't ignore the grassroots word of mouth sort of campaigning and that solidarity and power numbers that it builds when you have people gathering at their homes to have postcard writing parties or, you know, doing phone banking. Or in this case, if you look at social media, if, especially if you're on Twitter and you follow any black woman with a progressive leaning, you know, mind, they were all over this issue. They were motivating their sisters. They were.
But how are they doing
woke
that?
Vote. Woke vote.
Yes.
Right?
That's what they're
calling,
it's all
about, they're the calling it the woke vote.
Yeah. Yep. What was so great, Jen, was, and I never saw this one before, people were being motivated. If you know anybody in Alabama,
right,
write to them now.
Mm-hmm. Reach out to them.
That's, I think, and that was the thing. This was done and said and tweeted about with such urgency. And you had, again, people saying, like, I will support you in any way that I can. I will talk to you about this. I will give you a ride to the polls. You know, it's a little bit of peer pressure, I think. I think, you know, black women were motivating other black women. And you had some really strong public figures like the Joy Reids of the world who were, you know, supporting that vote, getting out to vote. And I think this was a very pinnacle empowering moment in this current millennium.
But also look at this too. I mean, it was more or less that we had black women that came out in overwhelming numbers. It was 97% plus. But then at the same time, you had Trump voters that stayed home. Mm-hmm. So therefore, that dichotomy together
absolutely
helped out big time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, again, there was, I think you were saying before, there was sort of this perfect storm of all the things that needed to be aligned for Jones in this current race did align.
But you talked earlier eloquently about the young people, mm-hmm, and they too, and also black evangelicals, mm-hmm, who said, you know, don't define us in the way that these other evangelicals are being defined.
Yeah, and by the way, we've heard from white evangelicals.
And white evangelicals
who
also
have said, don't put us in that same category.
Well, and exactly, right. And there's a lot of discussion. I was really following a lot on Twitter yesterday, and there was a big discussion around the idea, and, you know, really reflecting on the media, and something that I, as a reporter, was really paying attention to, is the sort of classification of demographics and subgroups that we say, you know, well, you know, will there be a high or a low black voter turnout? What would the white and evangelicals do versus And I think there was a reporter at the Montgomery Advisor who put it pretty eloquently, is that don't just bank your response or your opinion on what one person is said and when you're reading these stories and what one person is quoted on, because that's not necessarily representative of the whole subset of that group. There is diversification in these attitudes and these opinions, and they're all dynamic, too. They're going, I think right now, you see so many people changing their minds. I think Washington Post tweeted out yesterday a map, an infographic that showed, I think, 11 states flipping from red to blue since 2016. And, you know, what does that mean? And that's the psychology of people right now is very fascinating when it comes to absolutely change in issues.
Will they be empowered, though, to now in the next 2 weeks engage all around the country, those same people engage on this tax bill? Mm-hmm.
And I think it goes a step further to what Joe had mentioned before, too, to remember those local elections. If you look at the Sanders Party and their, you know, our revolution of getting more people of diverse backgrounds engaged not only as voters, but as candidates and as, or, you know, key players in supporting different political candidacies.
And I want to just add one more thing, too, about the tea leaves for next year. You look at a race from 8 years ago, you had Scott Brown versus Martha Coakley in Massachusetts, and that was kind of seen as the same arbiter for this, where you had Senate Democrats were scared for the following year. And sure enough, that was also a shellacking for the Democrats in that year. So maybe this might be the same thing on the other side for Republicans next year.
I wanted to mention one thing, and there was so much to cover. But right now, we don't know that Rosenstein, the deputy AG, is going to be appearing before the House Judiciary Committee. And obviously, this is going to be a very important hearing because we're going to find out what happens if the inevitable, in my mind, happens and he fires Mueller. and what will Rosenstein stay solid or not? I just wanted to mention that. Okay, back to the letters. Amy says, so Kirsten Gillibrand should just go along to get along, just like all those women who put up with sexual harassment and assault so as not to bite the hand that signed their paycheck. Wait a second, Amy. Did you hear anybody here on this panel say that she should just shut up? No. We discussed what the potential motivations were, whether it was brilliant or not. But I don't think anybody here ever told her to shut up.
I think the only one who's advocating that is Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Donald Trump.
And right. Trump, yeah.
No one on this
okay.
panel.
Okay, so... So Anonymous Sandy wrote, good morning, panel. Thank you for the wonderful work you do every day. I couldn't message earlier as I was driving, but a must go to in Water Valley, Port Schuyler, is Valenti's for the best mac and cheese ever.
Shout out to mac and cheese.
There it is.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Congratulations, right. Doug Jones and the heroes of Alabama for proving dignity, decency, and ethics all still exist in this country. Feeling hopeful for the first time in a year, and that's from Anonymous.
Mac and cheese, the new apple pie.
That's right.
From America.
Celebrate with a good old so good. Plate of mac and cheese.
Kevin from Melrose 55300 said, and a very few people will remember that. All the people in this room are looking at me and say, what is that? It was an early television ad in New York, Melrose 55300. Anyway, Kevin from Melrose, New York says, how can Republicans say Obama gutted the military when under his watch the defense budget was the largest? How can Republicans say, yeah, the defense budget was the largest ever?
Because they lie.
I tried to make earlier in the program.
I'm just nothing, reinforcing it.
Nothing stops them from doing that.
Do you remember?
We got to talk about.
Give me a second. I have a very important question to ask
ahead.
Gavin. Just give me a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
TV.
Do you remember?
What was Melrose 55300? Do you remember what they were?
What it was for? Maybe it was for like Venetian blinds.
Saks Quality Furniture.
Oh, Saks Quality.
Oh, there
furniture.
It is.
Yep, Saks Quality Furniture.
Yeah. No, okay. Here we go.
All right. Sorry, Teresa. I had to get that in.
I just wanted to mention the deadline for you.
You make a point. And Mark says hearing Roy Moore's wife talk about their lawyer was a big factor. What she said and the way she said it was altogether too familiar to African Americans. That is another reason why Roy Moore lost. Now, it was a remark about a Jewish lawyer, right?
Right.
And
right.
So
yes.
Therefore, what our letter writer is saying, African Americans can put themselves into, you know, well, I have a black friend, you know, or whatever else kind of category,
right.
Category there was. And this morning, because I was so interested in the Jewish vote, I asked our staff to look up what the percentages of the 11th largest Jewish community on Hanukkah was for the Albany region here and came up with 1.2% or something like that. That's extraordinarily low, right?
It is. Okay. We're out of time, so we're going to end there. Just a quick a reminder, because you mentioned Hanukkah, but we're going to have a Hanukkah special, Hanukkah Lights 2017, coming up at 11 o'clock this morning with Susan Stamberg. That'll be coming up at 11. We have more show. But first, my thanks to Teresa and Joe and Jen and Alan, and we'll be back after this.